The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek, the voice of the UNLV Lady Rebels, in for Kelly Bidlin this week. Kelly taking a well-deserved vacation. You know, we always say that about vacations, Wyatt. We say they're well-deserved. Do you consider Kelly's well-deserved?
Always.
Okay.
Always.
Just making sure.
I'll just remind him all the work that I've had to do, you know, filling in for him, but it's well-deserved for Kelly. Well, I think he's staying in Vegas, too.
Yeah, it's a staycation.
Yeah.
He's probably at one of these local hotels. Strip, non-strip, we don't know. But Wyatt, the voice of the Lady Rebels, hanging out with us 4 of the 5 days this week. One of the days will be Ortega on the Oscars and television in Vegas.
He was so excited. I think he said it was the Academy Awards odds were out.
Yes.
And he said they were the earliest they've ever had him out.
He was excited. It's June, for God's sake. So we'll get an early preview of that. It is football week here at the network. NFL week, that is. And we have our guide coming out on Thursday, our NFL betting guide, the much-anticipated one. That is coming out earlier than ever before. Talk about Oscar odds coming out earlier than ever before. So is our NFL betting guide. So each and every hour, we will at least do one segment on the NFL. Our own Adam Burke will be joining us in studio. Always a treat to get Adam on the show, period, let alone in studio. So we look forward to that. He'll talk about what he wrote about in the NFL betting guide, namely the AFC North. Also, some of his favorite season win totals, and those season win totals he wants no part of whatsoever, which is always a great exercise. In horse racing, they call them throwouts. Which horses can we throw out of this race when we're handicapping it? So he's got some season win total throwouts before he gives the ones that he loves. Wes Reynolds will join us also to talk about what he discussed in the NFL betting guide, namely the AFC South and the NFC South. So we'll get into that with him and other NFL thoughts all week long. Awards, you name it, season wins, futures odds, every hour on the show and on the network. And, you know, today we also will, it's not just football, we got to talk about the College World Series, the rubber match for all the marbles today, LSU and Florida, after LSU got trounced yesterday, 24-4. It is the big game today. We'll talk to Brad Porras about how much we can expect to see of Paul Skeens tonight for LSU. Will he start? If not, how much will he pitch? What about the total, which has been an underfest until yesterday? What's the weather report looking like there? We'll also talk Wimbledon here in a moment, because Wimbledon, a special numbers game investigation reveals, is just 1 week away, the really shortish grass season. Let me start with an NFL PSA. By the way, Will Hill, Chris Felica will join us on the show as well. Chris Felica with some college football season win thoughts as well. PSA on the NFL. Before we get into the entire week just talking NFL, I want to just say the public service announcement that we talk about on this show each and every year, and I give all the credit to Drew Densick, who was the first to really talk about this in a pricing sort of way. But one of the best markets, if not the single greatest, when betting the NFL, if you're new to sports betting, but you love the NFL more than anything else, and you're like, this is the year where I'm diving in, what you're going to get over the next 2-3 months, not just from this network, but from mainstream media everywhere, you're going to get a million bajillion NFL opinions on teams, on players, on coaches. The thing about betting markets is you're going to get all this. You're going to hear all of these opinions. You're going to be inundated with them, and you're going to have your own in the end. And for everybody, including yourself, some are going to be right. Some are going to be wrong. If you're lucky enough, most will be right and fewer will be wrong. The issue, though, is the season length is only 17 games. So let's contrast that with baseball. One of the tried and true betting markets that we have talked about on this network and on this show, and I have written about for year after year until Adam Burke, by the way, took over. I used to do the Baseball Manifesto here. I did it in years past, even before VSiN. But Adam Burke does such a spectacular job with that now, is baseball season win totals. And the reason baseball season win totals ultimately are such a great market to those of us who do deep dives into baseball is because there's 162 games. So even if your handicap, or I should say, even if your handicap experiences negative variance, you know, I have the only play that I made this year in the betting guide was the Rangers over. Well, the Rangers' last 20 games has not been as good as their first 40, but there's 162 games. So if my handicap is right, by and large, over the course of a Major League Baseball season, I'm going to win the bet if my handicap is right. You have enough time to overcome negative variance. College football, by the way, is fewer games than the NFL, but there's so many patsies on schedule that you don't notice it as much to the opposite. But the NFL is in that sweet spot, if you will, of, you know, your handicap could be right, but all it takes is for one or two things to go amiss, and you're not going to overcome the negative variance of a 17-game schedule. All it takes is for the wrong player to be hurt for four or five games, let's say, and your entire season win total play could fall by the wayside. So alternate season win totals is the answer to this. Now, there's not widespread availability of those right now, so we're not going to get into the weeds of which we like and which we don't like right now, but I just want you to plant this seed as you listen to this week and to coming weeks and months of NFL talk, that alternate season win totals is still the thing that I think you should gravitate towards the most. How Drew puts it, I think, is the most intelligent, which is the notion that sportsbooks can price those alternate season win totals properly is a fallacy. So in other words, the actual season win total, the consensus one that everyone's going to discuss content-wise, those are calibrated to perfection. But the alternate season win totals are going to have prices where you're actually going to be getting more bang for your buck than you ought to in some cases. So, and all it takes is for you to look at an NFL standings, a final NFL standings each and every year, and then juxtapose them against the pre-flop season win totals, and you will realize most of the league falls at least one and a half, two games, either to the good or to the bad compared to their consensus season win total. So playing an alternate one where you're getting over plus $2 is still the way to go, and the books just can't price those properly. So that's the PSA of the NFL season betting-wise. To tennis real quick, because Wimbledon is a week away, and I'm going to do a podcast on Wimbledon later this week on the Beating the Book feed. So I do want to give sort of a preliminary snapshot of that before we get into all the other things we're going to talk about today. The men's side, first of all, Novak Djokovic going for his 24th, unprecedented. He already got his 23rd Grand Slam singles title at the French Open. That is the record. Rafa has 22. Roger Federer has 20. Novak is going for the 24th. That would tie him with Margaret Court on the women's side for the most ever. So that's really what he's chasing now as he soars now to be the number one men's tennis player based on Grand Slams of all time. He's the favorite. He's the short shot to win Wimbledon on the men's side. He's minus 140. He is the favorite. Carlos Alcaraz is plus 350. Everybody else is 16-1 or longer. So let me just say in advance, I'm not going to sit here and recommend anybody else but either Novak Djokovic or Carlos Alcaraz. But eventually you will see quarter markets. Who will win which quarter? We won't know who's in which quarter until this Friday when the draw comes out. Players to keep in mind, though, right? Because not everybody will be in a Novak or a Carlos Alcaraz quarter. In terms of raw betting numbers on the men's side, and I do this for every tennis match that I handicap, and by the way, shout out Anna Bogdan, who just won as a plus 135 dog for us. If you're at VSiN.com/picks, that makes up for our Krejcikova loser yesterday. But with this, where is the value? Where, if this player ends up in a quarter that does not have Djokovic and Alcaraz, where might there be betting value? Well, based on raw betting numbers, I would first go to Alexander Zverev, 25-1 is what you see him in the outright. Now, he won't be quite that in a quarter, but keep in mind his numbers on grass, and grass is the shortest season of them all. It's a blink of an eye. It's like 5 weeks. But he has enough historical data on grass to let us know that, with the exception of Djokovic, he's got the best raw data. We're talking about serve percentages, return percentages. Zverev is a guy to focus on in terms of a quarter if he gets in one that does not feature Djokovic or Alcaraz. Believe it or not, Taylor Fritz, the number one ranked American men's player at 28-1 in the outright, I wouldn't in any way recommends Zverev or Fritz in an outright as long as Djokovic exists. But if Fritz finds himself in a quarter that doesn't have Djokovic or Alcaraz, his raw numbers on grass are tremendous as well. So Zverev and Fritz feature the best value. The only other player I would mention at the very bottom of that list, Alex de Minaur, who is not a well-known player to the casual fan, an Australian player, he's tremendous on grass when it comes to numbers as well. So keep in mind Zverev, Fritz, and de Minaur when it comes to the quarters when they come out this Friday. On the ladies' side, not nearly as top-heavy. Obviously, Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz rule the roost on the men's side. But on the women's side, This is not Clay. This is not, oh, it's Iga and everybody else. Iga's never won Wimbledon. She's never won a grass tournament. Part of the reason for that now is, I believe, she has so much pressure on her to win on clay that once the clay season is over, and she did win the French Open again, her third this past month, she just wants to unwind. She goes away. She hasn't played a grass court match until today. Today will be her first. So Wimbledon's on literally in a week. So is she the short shot? Yes. Do I have one bet on her from way back when at 4-1? I do. You can get her at plus 380. You might even be able to still find a 4-1 on Iga. But are there other players in the same vein that we just talked about with Fritz and Zverev and Dimonora on the men's side? Are there players that represent value and maybe even in this market to win an all? Yes. And I'm not talking about Elena Rybakina and Arina Sabalenka as the obvious answers to that question. Petra Kvitova and Ons Jabeur, you see them at 13-1 and 14-1 respectively. They may even find themselves in a quarter that will be without, you know, multiple other good players if they find themselves with a favorable draw. When it comes to raw grass data, again, serve percentages and return percentages, Petra Kvitova and Ons Jabeur, and I'll say it in the other order because if I'm doing it 1 and 2, Jabeur and Kvitova in that order have the best grass court data of any players on the ladies tour over the last 2 years. So those would be the two names. If you're getting good numbers when the draw comes out on Friday, really in this case, you don't even need the draw if you want to take a shot at them pre-draw on the outright. It's always best to know the draw first, but if you're feeling frisky, Jabeur and Kvitova represent the most value. Yes, I do have a Swiatek bet. I don't have any bets on anybody else yet, but even I, who loves Iga so much, may have a bet on those two come Wimbledon. College baseball next with Brad Porras.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. If physically located in Nevada, please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. We had a couple massive blowouts in baseball this weekend. First of all, Saturday night, the Angels beat the Rockies 25-1 in a game where at one point the in-game total was 30.5, was as high as I saw it get. By the way, the Rockies end up winning that series 2-1 with a plus 20 run differential. So good on the Rockies for overcoming the minus 20 run differential to win the series.
Terrible the Angels. I mean, you know, what a great Saturday, but it's like, hey, we should have spread the runs.
They should have spread it around. If you could only spread it around.
Oh,
if it could only work that way. College baseball had a big blowout yesterday. After LSU had taken game one of the best of three College World Series finals, obviously putting them in the driver's seat to win the whole kit and caboodle. Yesterday, Florida went to town on them, 24-4. And we had a graphic on this, just setting all kinds of records, did the Gators yesterday and evening up the best of three series. Florida's bats, this is from ESPN Stats and Information. Florida's bats put up some big numbers, it says. There's an understatement. Most runs by any men's college World Series game, 24. Most homers in a men's college World Series finals game at 6. Largest win margin in a men's college World Series finals game, plus 20, and tied the record for most hits in any men's college World Series game at 23. So it was just an absolute destruction. But much like with the Rockies Angels series, it is but one game. And today, the rubber match for all of it, Florida, LSU. This gentleman has been with us throughout it this year, famously with the Ole Miss tickets last year. Didn't hit a long shot this year, but you did call it. We bring in Brad Porras. Brad, we were talking yesterday. Brad Porras, former ball player at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, who has joined us for all of our college baseball coverage here. You called it yesterday when you were guessing the line here. You figured LSU minus 140. That's exactly where it is.
Yeah. Hey, good morning, Gil. Minus 140, minus 150, somewhere in there. I felt like that's a pretty fair price because they should be, I would think Paul Skenes is going to pitch, so they should be the favorite in this game.
Well, let's start there. Let's start with Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens, again, who we've talked about on this show, the biggest college baseball pitching prospect since Steven Strasburg, expected to go number two in the upcoming college baseball draft. This was the thing. This is 3 days rest now. Do you believe, what's the buzz? Is he starting? Is he not starting? And if he's not starting, how much of him would you expect to see?
I think from what I can tell, the buzz is he, you know, it's everyone speculating still, right? Like, he would want to pitch, but, you know, everyone in his inner circle doesn't want him to pitch. This is just my theory. Take it and leave it, because that's all everyone's got at this point. You would think he came to LSU, yes, to get his exposure to be the number one pick, but he also came there to win, right? He came there to win a national championship. He came from the Air Force. Like, he has a, you know, military background, military family background. They talked about how he did basic training, and he came out of basic training throwing 90 miles an hour as a freshman. Like, he has the mental toughness, the physical toughness. He walks to the locker room. You hear him talking a little bit? I outworked you. I'm not really convinced that that type of person and that type of personality is just going to sit back and say, no thanks. I'm not pitching in the national championship to win it all. I'm not saying it's going to go nine, but I just don't see him not pitching at all, unless his arm is just shot.
I'll take it one step further. Before the game that put them into the College World Series, right, against Wake, I said, I'm betting LSU plus 230. I do. I have a LSU at plus 230. Kelly jumped on with me. The whole bet was Skeens is going to pitch in this game tonight. He was starting that last game against Wake. He was brilliant. By the way, had to be brilliant to overcome Wake's brilliance as well. And the whole handicap was he would show up for a rubber match if it happens. So that's the first thing. And I'm of your mind. I think he pitches. It doesn't matter if he starts. I'm not going to make that call. But he will pitch. And I would imagine not negligibly in terms of the amount tonight. Like, I think we'll see him, if needed, for a good portion of this ball game tonight. Here's the other question. This is where you can really provide us insight, because we can speculate on Skeens all day. Where do the Florida arms fall right now, in your opinion? Are they in good shape, bad shape? Where do they stand?
It's so funny. Like, again, I think I can provide the insight, but it's really just your handicapping opinion of which Jack Caglione do you think is going to show up? Because he's going to start. Their bullpen is relatively, you know, I would say shot. Like, they threw their best punch game one with Cade Fisher and Neely in the extra inning. And they've only got one day's rest, right, to try and bounce back. But you would think those kids are going to come out with all the adrenaline, and they should be able to pitch. They may not have their best stuff, but they're going to have their best bullpen arms on one day rest. I still think they should be okay. But they're going to start Jack Caglione, who, in my opinion, I think people like to hype him up, and, you know, he was great offensively, but he was really hit or miss as a starter. So he hasn't been good offensively in Omaha, really kind of the majority of their postseason run. He's been in his head. You can tell at the plate he's in his head. I don't think they're going to get a good outing out of him. Again, just my speculation. He's been Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde on the mound this entire year. And the way he's been mentally playing baseball lately, and I'm throwing out yesterday. Yes, he hit a home run. It's like, great. But I'm throwing out yesterday. That was a bloodbath. I tweeted, I feel like this is game one of a junior college doubleheader. I've been on the side of that ball where you lose by 20 runs, and then guess what? You come right back out, and the team that just got blown out by 20 runs goes and wins the game. It's like, it's just one game, just like you were just talking about with the Rockies. It's just one game.
Yeah.
They were front-running. They were winning. It's great. But if Skeens shows up and Thatcher Hurd is looking better lately, man, I don't know. I'm not convinced.
You know what's funny about yesterday? Again, this is going to be the most outlandish statement ever said on this show ever, period. They lost 24-4. There was a scenario early in that game. LSU left nine guys on base in the first three innings. That Florida pitcher looked so shot. Like, that game, yeah. They lost by 20. I'm going to dare say it could have gone another way had they cashed in early in any of those innings. I mean, LSU could have been out to a huge lead in that game as well. Obviously, giving up 24 at the end, who knows? But point being, I don't know who of these pitchers is even reliable at this point. It really is a game of attrition. Let me ask you, so you're leaning LSU, in other words. Is when we put all that in the wash, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I'm leaning LSU because I don't think Jack Caglione's going to come out and have a great start. I mean, prove me wrong. I mean, go ahead. It's just my opinion. I wouldn't bet on him to come out and throw lights out. And then on the other side, Thatcher Hurd for LSU has pitched much better down the stretch. He kind of showed up at the end of the year. And you know Paul Skenes is going to pitch. And you know what you're going to get with Paul Skenes. So if you're asking me to take Skenes for at least half the game and Hurd, who's looked better, versus Jack Caglione, who we don't really know what we're going to get, I'm going LSU.
Last thing here, Brad. I have been betting the under in every one of these games at Charles Schwab. That was a foolproof strategy up until yesterday, right? I went one too far, didn't get the wind report. I got a little too frisky, but it's literally been like five games in a row, right, where the under is just cashing. It has been no issue whatsoever. Any knowledge, I should say, of the weather report in this game? Is the wind blowing in? Is it supposed to blow out? It's at 9 right now. I took the under not knowing, again, because it's a Skenes game. Figuring that if the wind is blowing in, we're not going to see a 9 come game time.
Yeah. So I did some research on the wind, and the wind is going to be blowing out not as violently as yesterday, but the wind direction is out again. So my opinion would be pass on an under. And if you want to play, I would think a correlated parlay is LSU and the over. And that's just going off Jack Caglione and their pitchers can't show up because the attrition has got them, and LSU just pounds them and they run with it. You know, I'm saying 24 runs yesterday, but I could see LSU winning an over game where they, if Jack Caglione comes out and, you know, I've seen him only go one or two or three innings and let up several runs. I mean, I could see that happening.
Oh, I would. I would imagine they'd be quick on the hook today for sure.
Yeah. And I don't see how they're going to need him to have a good start, at least four or five innings, to then hand it over to Neely and Fisher, who just pitched, and Slater, who, you know, we're going to give them one or two times through the lineup. They're going to need something out of Caglione, and if he doesn't give it to them, I think they're cooked. And okay, with the wind not blowing in, I would pass on the under. I'd let it go.
Okay.
I like LSU the most and then over a little bit.
LSU the most, over a little bit, maybe even a little correlation, Brad suggests there. For the big title of it all tonight, one game decides it. LSU in Florida tonight. LSU anywhere between a -135, -150 favorite. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it. Chris Felica, the Bear from Fox, talks college football and Wimbledon with us next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only 19 United States dollars. That's it. At vsin.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. Ladies and gentlemen, along with Adam Burke, he is the glue that holds this entire operation together. He is the co-host of VSiN Tonight, which he does with Matt Eumanns each and every weekday night here on the network. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one. Coincidentally, ladies and gentlemen, it's Wes Reynolds. How you doing, Wes?
Good morning, Gil. How are you?
I'm well. Did you have Keegan Bradley, by the way?
I did not. I had Brian Harmon. So three straight weeks now after two winners, three straight weeks with runners up, Fleetwood in Canada, Rory at the U.S. Open, and Brian Harmon T2. But he was never really in it. Keegan Bradley at one point, had like a 6-shot lead in the final round.
Okay. Any Rocket Mortgage thoughts or we should wait for long shots for those?
I'll have those tomorrow. I'll be writing that column today, but it looks like a pretty wide open event where the favorite is actually 14-1. So, you know, we've been getting these events where we're getting like 6-1, 7-1, or +750, but none of the real top big guns, the usual favorites, the Schefflers, the Rahms, the McElroys this week. So very wide open event in Detroit.
All right, let's talk NFL Betting Guide. It is NFL Betting Guide week. It comes out on Thursday here at VSiN. Adam Burke already talking about it earlier on the show. And there is no shortage of things to talk about in the National Football League. Now, you've been on here before, and you've discussed a couple big division bets that you've made, namely in the AFC South and the NFC South. You wrote about both of those divisions in the guide. But for those who missed it, let's talk AFC South first. What is your favorite bet of them all here, sir, in the AFC South?
Well, it would probably be, for me, the actual division win. And I like the Tennessee Titans at $4 or more. I think you could get a little bit more than 4-1 still in the market. And it's not just a case of, like, loving Tennessee necessarily. It's just the fact that I think Jacksonville's gotten overpriced in the market. I think that they're the justifiable favorite, but I've seen them 160, minus 165, minus 170. And look, they have a quarterback that has the potential to be something special, Trevor Lawrence, and I think he's going to continue to develop. I think that offense is going to score points, but I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know they won the division last year, but keep in mind, this team did start 3-7, and the division really broke for them in the AFC South, if you recall, because Houston obviously was in the midst of a rebuild, and they still are. Indianapolis had fired Frank Reich midway through the season and had a couple injuries kind of stack up. And speaking of injuries, nobody was hurt more than the Tennessee Titans, especially on defense. Nobody, if you look at the Football Outsiders metric of adjusted games lost, no one had more adjusted games lost on defense than the Tennessee Titans. That team started out 7-3 and then didn't win a game for the rest of the season, yet had a lead in the fourth quarter on the road with a guy that was a practice squad quarterback in Joshua Dobbs in the final week of the season, week 18, in Jacksonville. It was 16-10, and then Jacksonville gets a field goal, and then Dobbs gets hit, fumbles. Jacksonville gets a defensive touchdown and ends up winning the AFC South in the final week. So it's just more of a case of just taking a price here, Gil, I think. But I do think Tennessee is going to be better now that they're healthier.
So in addition to the Titans winning the division, would you take them over 7.5 then? It would seem. And then what's your point with Jacksonville where you would actually go under on them?
Yeah, I'd have to get 10, and that's what I got, 10 plus 105, which is still out there at a couple places. I didn't get the 10.5s that were out there earlier in the spring, but I just looked at Jacksonville. Now that they're the division winner, they have to play the other division winners, and the schedule gets much tougher. So they have to play Kansas City and Buffalo and San Francisco. Meanwhile, Tennessee, they get that second place schedule. And, you know, with Tannehill coming back, and look, Tannehill is a middling starting quarterback at best at this standpoint, but he's better than what they were throwing out there in the second half of the season in the midst of that 7-game losing streak. So yeah, I think 7.5 over. I think I've seen plus 110 out there at least as recently as last week. So that'd be the way I'd go. If you don't want to play both, just pick one or the other. But I think Tennessee at above 4-1, this has been like their division. And now Mike Vrabel is back in the role of the underdog. We know on a game-to-game basis that Mike Vrabel is really good as an underdog. I think he's just a little bit over 500 straight up as an underdog, let alone against the number.
Let's go to the NFC South. And by the way, by the end of the week, we'll try to get to every single division in some regard in the NFL, heading into the NFL betting guide release on Thursday. Wes focused on the AFC South. He focused on the NFC South. Again, you talked a little bit about this last week. You have a division play in what is, I mean, let's face it, it's consensus that this is the worst division in all of football. I think that's probably a fair statement. Some might argue with that. But top to bottom, there's a lot of people who just go by the quarterback here, and they, you know, the belief is, well, David Carr with the Saints is going to be the best quarterback in this division, therefore the Saints will win it. You don't quite see it that way.
No, I don't. And once again, I think it's right for the Saints kind of by default to be the favorite in this division, but This is going to be Derek Carr's fifth offensive coordinator in his career. He's now with Pete Carmichael down there in New Orleans. And look, maybe Derek Carr, this is like his revenge tour because the Raiders clearly didn't want him. So now he's back, or with New Orleans and with the new team. Michael Thomas does return for the Saints, but is he going to be the same player he was 3 years ago? Keep in mind, he missed time with injury. He missed time with some disciplinary issues. Sean Payton, the former coach, had suspended him from the team. So I think that that's kind of a big ask for New Orleans. And then plus whatever happens with Alvin Kamara, how long that suspension is going to be for what happened out here in Las Vegas during Pro Bowl weekend a couple years ago, that there's got to be probably at least some semblance of disciplinary action for that. Tampa Bay, who knows what they are going to be. It looks like it's going to be Baker Mayfield winning that quarterback job over Kyle Trask. But this is a team now, I think, Gil, that's starting to feel the pain and the constraints of the salary cap, because they went all in with a short window with Tom Brady, and that proved to be successful in the fact that they won a Super Bowl and also two division titles in the NFC South. But now is when you pay the price. And now you've got some veterans on this team that know that they're not a Super Bowl contender, and are they going to start to look around at other teams? Meanwhile, in Carolina, new coach, new starting quarterback. I think there's potential long term, but it might be asking too much this year. So that leaves me with the Dirty Birds, the Atlanta Falcons, at about plus 250 to win the division. And I'm not totally sold on Desmond Ridder. He was 2-2 at the end of the season with those starts. One of them was against Tampa Bay when they had clinched the division and they started pulling starters in that game. But I look at the offense around him and they're going to be able to run the ball. They were top three in the NFL in running the ball last year, especially on that right side behind Lindstrom and McGarry, who finally lived up to his billing as a first-round pick. So they're going to be able to run the ball with not only Tyler Algier, who had 1,000 yards as a rookie, but also Bijan Robinson, who they drafted with the eighth overall pick out of Texas. And what I think that they could do offensively, what makes them even more dynamic, I think they could finally get Kyle Pitts the ball. And that's what you have to do. They've had him playing like tight end. He's basically a big receiver. So now you can line him out wide. You can line him up in the slot. You can line him up in tight end. Jonnu Smith, I think, was a very good acquisition for this team, and he will play tight end. He was in Tennessee, actually, with Arthur Smith, the current Falcons head coach, when he was the OC there with the Titans. So that's just going to open up the offense even more. And Atlanta also, finally, they finally got out of that salary cap hell that they were in with Matt Ryan and with Julio Jones, finally out from underneath those contracts. So Atlanta was able to spend some money on free agency to try to upgrade that defense.
Real quick then, besides a Falcons bet to win the division, I'll ask you the same that I did in the AFC South. Would you also play the Falcons over season win and the Saints under season win totals?
Yeah, I would probably play the Saints under season win. I think the Falcons at 8.5, that's probably the right price. Look, 8-9 maybe could win this division, or 9-8. I think it's going to be very similar to what the AFC South was last year, but I still think it at 5-2 plus 250 or more, there's value on Atlanta in this division.
Yeah, Atlanta 8.5, New Orleans season win total set at 9.5. By the way, the other teams in the division, just for thoroughness sake, Panthers 7.5 and the Buccaneers at a lowly 6.5. A lot of people taking a shot on the Bucs, among other teams, to have the worst record in the NFL with Baker Mayfield assumed to be the starting quarterback this year in Tampa Bay. More with Wes Reynolds on the other side. Has he added any open championship bets? Golf's fourth and final major this season coming up here in a couple weeks. And Wes is more by popular demand. Rapid fire Wes questions across the sports and non-sports betting landscapes. It's a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network.